You're listening to the State of Women Radio Network, the first and only global radio network focused exclusively on women and girls, with your host, Michelle Jaffe.
Welcome to Women Investing in Women and Girls. I'm your host, Michelle Jaffe, and we are with our guest today, Vanessa Grellet, who is doing incredible things in the area of finance. This is such an interesting topic, and I'm very excited to learn more about what you do, Vanessa. First of all, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
I'm great. Thank you. And thank you for having me.
Of course. Again, we're just so happy that you could make it on our program today. Now, the first thing I want to talk about with you is your role in finance and what it's like in the finance industry. I might become a finance student myself in a few weeks, so this is a topic that's important to me as well on a personal level. But I'd like to know, first of all, what was your first impression of the financial career field, if you can talk more about that?
Sure. Finance is an exciting industry. My first experience actually was in finance. I started my career in New York in an investment bank, a French investment bank. And I would say that it's an industry that is exciting. It gives you a rich experience. As a woman, it's an industry that gives you a lot of opportunities. You earn a decent amount of money, and I think it's an industry that I recommend as a first experience for sure, because it gives you opportunities to see the world and to have a view of the world that is very interesting to either continue in this industry or to build your career in other industries. And it shapes the world, and it gives you the opportunity also to create and build businesses afterwards. So I highly recommend this as a stepping stone either in this industry or in other industries.
Very good. Now, when you first came into the field, though, did you like it at first, or was there a time that, you know, you had to adjust to the financial world, if you will?
So I graduated from business school and as well as from law school. So I always went back and forth. So I was also a securities lawyer. So I built my skills and my strengths from both sides. And I have to say that being a securities lawyer has helped me a lot in business. So I am not a purely financial person. I also have a lot of negotiation skills that came from my legal background. I think I built my career around those two strengths. So I have to say that you have to build your strengths and your career based on what you like to do rather than on specific skills, and then you can move towards what your goals are. So whether it's finance or engineer skills or accounting skills or legal skills, how you determine your career and what you want to do really needs to be driven not only from your skills but where your passion lies.
Wonderful. Now, I know you talked a little bit earlier about how a career in finance can give you more opportunities, that can help you see different ways of the world, but what do you personally find the most fulfilling about working in the area of finance as opposed to maybe another area of business?
I think finance and the bottom line drives a lot of decisions in business, and I think it's maybe you don't see that first when you come into your new career, and you don't see how important it is to understand that aspect of the business. So I think really understanding how those mechanics work is key to developing the business. And I think it's you're at the when you're in the financial sector, you're at the center of of creating opportunities for companies, and that's what's really exciting. You're helping them grow, you're helping them, you know, giving them finances to grow and build their dreams, and that's pretty exciting.
Terrific. Now, I'd like to remind our listeners that you're listening to Women Investing in Women and Girls. We are talking with our guest today, Vanessa Grellet, about her career in finance. So now we're going to shift the conversation a little bit to talking about one of the ways that you're working in this field, and that being NYSE Euronext. So can you explain more about what this company is?
So that was my last 8 years working at NYSE. Now I currently work at PwC. The last 8 years of my career was working for the New York Stock Exchange, and I was working in the corporate strategy department. And the corporate strategy department deals with the mergers and acquisition and the overall strategy of the company. And what it looks at is the organic, what we call the organic and external growth of the company. It looks at all the businesses in the company and sees how the company can grow and do more business and how it can grow the bottom line. And it can be through internal transformation and growing the clients and growing the business, or it can be an external growth through acquiring other companies. And I was focusing on acquiring other companies and merging with other companies. And at the time at the exchange, we were trying to partner with a lot of companies. We had, when I came to the exchange, it was merging. There was a big merger between the U.S. NYSE and the European exchanges Euronext. So that was a $14 billion merger. And then a transatlantic merger, and then we continue to try to make strategic partnerships with exchanges in the Middle East, for example, Qatar, or in the European Union, for example, in Warsaw. And then we tried to merge with the German exchange, and finally, when I left, we got acquired by another U.S. exchange called ICE, Intercontinental Exchange. So it was a very exciting time to be working at the exchange. We had, you know, partnerships all over the world, also related to the IT industry, because today the world of exchanges is a very heavy IT industry, and it was a very exciting time to work there. And now,
Oh, no, I was just saying that sounds amazing, and I love the way that companies like this truly recognize the importance of globalization in bringing growth to different companies, right?
Yes, absolutely. And the exchanges all over the world have been at the center of developing, you know, finance and bringing finance to companies that raise capital to grow. So everywhere in the world, the exchanges have played a central role historically of raising capital for listed companies. So now it changes, but that's historically what they have been there for.
Right, and it all just sounds so interesting, and how great it is to be part of something so much bigger than maybe a job just in the United States. You get to work with different companies and acquisitions from all over the world. So, you know, something like this really gives you a global perspective on the business structures abroad, or, you know, just having that exposure to different markets must be, you know, so interesting and really special to have a job in that area.
Yeah, so it was really fantastic. You see that the world is really a global place. And you should really embrace it if you have the opportunity to work with people abroad. It's really a fantastic experience.
Well, great. When we come back from our first break, we're going to talk more with Vanessa about investing specifically. But for right now, I want to invite you to connect with us by going to facebook.com/womeninvesting or on Twitter, be sure to use the hashtags WomenInvest, hashtag GirlsInvest, and hashtag MeForShe. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the State of Women Radio Network, the first and only global radio network focused exclusively on women and girls.
And welcome back to Women Investing in Women and Girls. I'm your host, Michelle Jaffe, and we are joined by our guest today, Vanessa Grelitz, who, before we're talking to the break, we're talking to her about her career in finance and what that means and the benefits that go along with having a career in this industry. Now, Vanessa, you also do a lot of work when it comes to investing, and a topic that we like to go over on our program a lot is specifically women and how women fit into the industry of investing. And first of all, I would like to address some of the issues that we come across. And I'd like to know from you why you believe that some women may be hesitant or anxious to become investors themselves.
Yeah, traditionally, there has been a gap for women to perceive themselves as investors, and we have to bridge that gap. There are some initiatives that have been taking place, like, for example, Deborah Jackson, who is trying to set up something called 1,000 Women Strong, which I am part of, who is creating a pool of small companies that you can invest in that are led by women. So it's women investing in women. But traditionally, women have been more passive investors than men. And I would say that the asset management industry has not targeted women that much as a client segment, and now is seeing that women are not satisfied with most of the advice that have been given to them. So they are there's a disconnect between the financial advice that they've been given, and so they're not very engaged with their financial advisor. So I think it's sort of a chicken and egg problem.
So addressing it from the other side, so, you know, there aren't enough women as investors, and then there aren't enough women receiving investments from other investors, whether it be men or women. So why do you believe it's so important to invest specifically in women-owned businesses?
I think women-owned businesses are very successful businesses. We see it in the microfinance industry. We see it in results in the startup industry. There are very good statistics around this, and I think that there are also statistics that show that there is bias around the financing of women in startups, that the funds are not allocated diligently towards women, and that it's much harder for women to get financing at an early stage. So there are various reasons for that, but we have to continue to support women financing at very, very early stages. And also, I have to say that there's it should be even further up down the line. It should be at an education stage also, at the university level. Women should be encouraged also at that stage to be confident that they can pitch also, and they are able to raise funds as well as men, and that confidence gap should be sort of reduced. But it's a very tough question, I have to say, because there's still a big gap.
And you know, we hear about some places that, they've had more progress than others in trying to reduce that gap. But it's important to know that there still is a problem out there with the gender gap in finance or in other areas of business as well as with STEM. What we've talked about that earlier in some past conversations with guests. So I think that it's important that you make that note that it's important to educate these girls and get them thinking in this manner before they step out into the real world and have a job of their own. So I think that's very important. But you also do a lot of work with impact investing. And first of all, I'd like for you to make a distinction with what's the difference between philanthropy and impact investing. What sets them apart?
Sure. So I run the impact investing group for Nexus Youth Summit, which is a group of second generation philanthropists. And I'd love to explain to you a little bit better what impact investing is. So you see, philanthropy is one stage, and it's very important where you give out money for specific projects or specific causes. At some point, some people who were doing philanthropy wanted to have another approach where they wanted to invest, and it was mainly a lot of former entrepreneurs or successful entrepreneurs who had made their money and who wanted to invest and give away their money, but also wanted this entrepreneurial approach and see that their money had a real impact. So they wanted to invest in other social entrepreneurs, and they wanted to measure how that money was used. So they wanted to invest in companies that not only made a financial return, but also could measure a certain social impact. So for example, if what was important to you is that children did not die because they were just drinking water, they didn't want to give to a philanthropy that would just do clean water. They wanted to invest in a social entrepreneur that would create innovative solution to create clean water and measure then how many less children would die from diarrhea because they were not drinking dirty water. So that is the idea behind impact investing, is that you're actively investing in companies and you're measuring the positive impact that they have and the measurable impact that they have on the population or the metrics that you're interested in.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, this form of investing is doing some great things for businesses and organizations all around the world. So I think that's very important. Now, do impact investors face different challenges than other investors do?
So impact investing, like any other early stage investing is a difficult type of investment because you have to be very careful in your due diligence. And like any early stage investing, there are some failures. And so impact investing has been challenged in terms of their returns. But now there has been some studies that came out which has shown some very positive numbers in terms of returns. Mm-hmm. But it's a difficult investment. It's what we call patient capital. So it's a long-term investment. And,
right.
But it's something that allows you to align your values with your investments. And I think that's quite important because, you know, when you have a $30 million or $300 million foundation and you can give so much to philanthropy, the rest is invested in the capital markets, but you also want to invest in something that's aligned with the values of the foundation. So you can divest from the things that are not aligned from the foundation, but then you also want to positively invest in something that is aligned with the foundation. And impact investing allows you to do that. So it's very, very important.
That's amazing. Now, do you find that as opposed to other forms of investing that millennials specifically are attracted to impact investing?
Absolutely, because millennials want to change the world, and impact investing is the vehicle that allows you to do that and allows you to concretely see the results of your investments, because you measure every year what your investment does. That's the beauty of impact investing, is that every year you have a report from the company that tells you this is our impact. Every year you're measuring what you're doing. You know, you have the financial return, but you also have, you know, what your impact is. And this is very concrete. And I think this is why the millennials are not only attracted to impact investing, but also attracted to social investing and companies that are doing this directly. And you also see the flip side of it is that companies, more traditional companies, are also turning around their business models, because you cannot not change things internally and not take into account that movement, because innovation is now coming from there. So, you know, it's not only investing in impact, but turning around your business model towards impact.
That's wonderful. Now, I do want to invite our listeners to let us know what you think of this discussion. Be sure to go to facebook.com/womeninvesting, or on Twitter, be sure to use the hashtag womeninvest, hashtag girlsinvest, and hashtag weforshe. Stay tuned, we'll be right back.
You're listening to the State of Women Radio Network, the first and only global radio network focused exclusively on women and girls, with your host, Michelle Jaffe.
And welcome back. You're listening to Women Investing in Women and Girls. I'm your host, Michelle Jaffe, and we are with our guest today, Vanessa Grellet, who is coming to us talking about the area of finance. And before we went to the break, we talked about women and their roles in investing on both sides, as the investor and the investee, as well as impact investing and the significance of this form of investment. Now we're going to focus on the work that Vanessa does within her firm, PricewaterhouseCoopers. So, Vanessa, welcome back, and can you tell us a little bit more about this firm and what you do within your job here?
Sure. So I'm a leader in the asset management and wealth management practice of PwC in New York. We advise, all the asset management firms and wealth management firms, ranging from, private equities, banks, hedge funds, or other alternative investment vehicles. What else could I tell you? Basically, we advise them on their strategy or reorganizations or mergers and acquisitions. We have a global team and a U.S. team. We also have a team that advises family offices and high net worth individuals on their private wealth. And we work with our tax teams and insurance teams also globally. PwC has over 200,000 employees. It's a huge firm. I just started over a couple of months ago, so I'm just getting used to this environment, which is very exciting. It's my first time being a consultant, but I really love it because I used to work in the industry, and it's really nice to be on the other side, working with a lot of clients and helping them through their transition, their reviewing their strategy, reviewing their their targets, if they want to, you know, if they want to buy another firm, if they're look at their options, et cetera. It's really exciting to be on the other side and really help them go through their challenges and their development. It's really an exciting time also to be in this industry after the crisis because there's a lot of opportunities. There's a lot of opportunities globally, I would say also. A lot of changes that have come with the regulation, so a lot of firms are changing also due to the regulation. And to do it efficiently and smartly is really a challenge. So they're looking also for our advice to help them through this transition. So it's really exciting.
Very much so. Now, can you explain a little bit about what asset and wealth management is?
Sure. So asset management basically is, think about what your 401k is. Think about what your retirement is. There are huge asset managers and people who take care of all these assets globally. And they're just the largest pension plans and asset managers that need to take care of all this money that everyone has and basically make sure that it keeps growing and over the years it keeps it stays put and that it's ready for your retirement. So that's one part of the asset managers. So the Blackstones, the BlackRock, the private equity firms, the Apollos, the Carlyle groups, just to name a few, these are the Tiara Crafts. These are the big asset managers that are there. Then you have the big banks like the UBS, the Deutsche Bank, the Goldman Sachs, the Morgan Stanleys of this world. All of them have asset management arms that deal with, you know, all the money that you put on the side. So they're the ones who are basically running the money that you have and that that the PIMCOs of this world also have. So
wonderful. You know, I think a lot of people don't realize where once the money goes into the bank or, you know, like who deals with the money afterwards. So I think that it's great to know these banks and everything like that, these services exist.
Yeah.
Now, can you tell us about some of the common mistakes that you see when businesses come to you, corporations, some of the common mistakes that you see that, firms like PwC help with?
So I think there's one or two. The thing is not anticipating how fast technology is going and how fast millennials and Generation Z is going. I would say this is one of the main challenges because right now the pace and the evolution of technology is tremendous. And, we haven't seen this evolution, you know, over the past 20 years. And right now, people who are now almost like quasi-monopolies may not be there in 20 years. So I think that not anticipating that and not anticipating the change in demographics would be like a big mistake that people may make. And it's not only in the financial services, it's everywhere. So not anticipating that evolution and not doing anything about it is a big issue.
Right.
Also, not looking into or not taking into account the change in regulation being maybe an issue, because you can actually take into you can take advantage of a change in regulation rather than being passive. I would say, like in every industry, if you're not proactive, it's going to backfire. So you have to stay ahead of the curve. You have to be proactive, and you have to be agile. We are in a time when if you're not agile, if your employees are not agile, and if your whole company is not agile, it will be very difficult for you to stay ahead of the curve.
Absolutely. You know, technology is so powerful, and there have been many reports out there that having more millennials as part of your corporation is a great asset to have because, again, you know, they tend to understand technology more. And I think those are some great points about, you know, what businesses and corporations can do to ensure that they don't fall into those common traps that you see in different businesses all over the world. Now, have you changed your investment philosophy, your consulting philosophy? Have you changed this at all over the years? And if so, how? We can do professionally. We can do according to what you do within your firm. How has the overall philosophy towards consulting and helping these businesses changed over the years?
Well, I have to say that PwC is the number two firm where millennials want to work after Google. So I have to say that the firm is doing a pretty good job at investing in its employees. And I think this firm has transformed itself into a company that totally aligns with those values that I mentioned, of being agile and being at the forefront of change, so that it's able to also advise change. And I think that's key to our success.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have to practice what you preach, right?
Right, exactly.
So that's what I find here. And if you're not able to do that, I don't think you can be successful.
Mm-hmm. I definitely agree with that point there. Now, we are going to go to another break, but we encourage all of you to connect with us by going to facebook.com/womeninvesting or on Twitter to use the #womeninvest, #girlsinvest, and #WeForShe. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the State of Women Radio Network, the first and only global radio network focused exclusively on women and girls.
And welcome back to Women Investing and Women and Girls. I'm your host, Michelle Jaffe, and we are with our guest today, Vanessa Grellet, who is doing incredible things in the area of finance. Before the break, we talked about her role in PwC, PricewaterhouseCoopers, and helping businesses achieve success. And now we're going to shift the conversation to something else that Vanessa is part of, and that is CODA. So Vanessa, if you can just talk a little bit of background on what CODA is.
Sure. I'm the co-founder of CODA, which is a foundation that focuses on innovators in emerging markets. So we're building a platform basically that allows us to give visibility for innovators in emerging markets. So right now you have a lot of innovation going on in Africa, South America, Southeast Asia, innovations that are low cost, that are really helpful, but that have no visibility or people are not able to share it, where it could be useful in another country, et cetera, because people don't have access to the internet or don't have means to share it or a platform for them to share. So this is what we're building. We've been doing a pilot with Parsons School of Design for the past 15 weeks, and we're going to create a pilot in September, and we've been building that platform with them, and we're going to test the platform in the coming months, and so that innovators will be able to upload their innovation on the platform, share it with other innovators, and develop their innovation, and also share it with other innovators and pockets of poverty in developed countries, and have a sort of a cross-cultural innovation and design thinking sharing. So we're very excited. We're looking for funders, and we'll be presenting this platform at some social innovation summit very soon. So it's coming together. But we really want to give a voice to these innovations that have not yet seen, have had any exposure.
Absolutely. And it sounds like such an incredible organization. Now, where can we learn more about what you're doing with CODA?
We haven't had our website up yet, but you should be able to have it on my LinkedIn profile soon. So coming up.
All right. Well, that will be definitely something to look forward to. Now, you do a lot of work with helping women and girls, especially in the area of finance. So I'd like to know from you how your work specifically focuses on the development and the advancement of women and girls in you know, your industry.
Yes, so I used to run the women's group at the New York Stock Exchange, and I helped put together the UN Women's Entrepreneur Day with Wendy Diamond, and I think it's critical that women, and especially women who are graduating from school, realize that it's they really need to work and work their way up, and that it's not a given that equality is out there. And when I say that, I mean that I think that when people graduate these days, they think that it's okay, that, you know, everything has evolved and that it's fine, and it's actually not. And I think that I see women not going into the financial industry, and I don't know why. And I think that I would encourage a lot of girls to go into the financial industry, because I think it's an amazing industry. It's very formative. It's an extraordinary school for life, I would say, even if you don't continue there. But I really would encourage a lot of people who graduate to go there and hang in there and not drop out. Don't think it's a macho industry. I've had an amazing career there. I've had amazing colleagues. I don't think you should, you know, think that if you hear something, you know, once or twice, it's offensive, or Just go and do your work, and you'll find amazing people there. You know, there might be one or two people that, you know, may not be great, but I think it's like everywhere. But I would encourage people to go there and stick with it, because it's a great industry. And
Perfect.
Don't think that everything is given. That's what the message I wanted to give.
Mm-hmm. That's some great insight, and definitely something that I believe that women and girls should, you know, take to heart the advice that you just shared with us, and how they should be encouraged to pursue a career in finance, and that they shouldn't let, you know, a stereotype or something hold them back, because really, they don't have to exist, and it really is very encouraging. So thank you. I also want to talk about the importance of collaboration when it comes to women in the areas of finance. You just said you helped to that you created the women's group at the New York Stock Exchange, and that you also participated in the Women's Entrepreneurship Day. So if you can just talk a little bit about the importance of having a network of females in finance and to help support each other.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think until we created that group, I created that the New York Stock Exchange Women's Group when I was in London. I know it sounds counterintuitive, but we had a big office in London. And, you know, the women who came to the group, you know, until you created that group, they were sort of scattered alone in the office, and there was not a lot of them. And they were so happy when we created that group. It was just like a really super nice group, and we were able to share a lot, and we did some training together, and we did a lot of, you know, we had drinks together, and it created like a really nice group where we could ask ourselves some questions that we would never ask other colleagues, and it created solidarity. That was really nice, and I think it was needed in that office, and no one realized it was needed until it was there. So I think it's a special bond that it's a privileged bond that you should never forget that it's there, and if it's not there, you should create it, and you'll be surprised how much you can rely on it.
Love it. That sounds amazing. Now, lastly, Vanessa, you do a lot of work within investing and, you know, helping to invest wealth and assets. But what does it mean to invest in a woman and a girl? Is it just financial, or does it mean something more?
Well, I think when you invest in a woman entrepreneur, it means more. It means trust, and she will give much more back. Trust me.
Mm-hmm.
and if you go to the website 1000 Women Strong, you understand what I mean, because it's the website of Deborah Jackson, Plum Alley. She only invests in other women. There's plenty of other, you know, you'll find, if you Google invest in women, you'll probably find a lot of other websites. But, you know, when you invest in women, there's trust, and it's very unlikely she'll let you down.
That's great. Thank you so much. And we encourage everyone to definitely go check that out. Again, how can we find that? What's the website for that?
I think it's www.1000numbersstrong.com.
Awesome. Great. Vanessa, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on our show today. Thank you so much for having this conversation with us.
Thank you for having me. It was great.
Of course. Thank you. Now, we encourage all of you to connect with us by going to facebook.com/womeninvesting, or on Twitter, be sure to use the hashtags womeninvest, #girlsinvest, and #weforshe. Now, you've been listening to Women Investing in Women and Girls. The show is produced by the State of Women Radio Network, the first radio network for women and girls. I'm your host, Michelle Jaffe. Until next time.
Thanks for listening to Women Investing in Women and Girls with Michelle Jaffe. Download our shows on iTunes or listen on demand right here on thestateofwomen.com, the first and only global radio network focused exclusively on delivering the latest trends in investing, entrepreneurship, and global women's issues by and for women and girls.